Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to start this week off with, I think, a pretty dynamic subject in an area of, well, how do I want to say it, of profession that most people don't hear anything about. My guest today is Janice Chamberlain. Her book is titled Locked Up with Success. She was a teacher in a prison. Jan, welcome to a show.
Hi.
Hi.
Now, I'm still in the prison. I still teach in the prison. I still am.
You're still teaching in prisons.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Now, Jan, I wanted my audience to know something about you. You have been a teacher educator in public and private schools. You also were a case manager for child welfare. You're a businesswoman. You've got a number of degrees, but you decided that you wanted to work with prison inmates. And there are so many of us that have watched things on television, we've heard comments, and we go, who in the world would want to spend their life and really be committed to teaching inmates? You're dealing with killers, addicts, you've got all of these personalities that most of us will do anything to avoid interacting with. How is it that you decided that as an educator that this is something you were open to even considering doing?
Well, you're right, Donna. Nobody thinks of that when they're little. Nobody plans on teaching in a prison. I didn't even know the profession existed. I had been laid off from teaching because of budget problems back in the early 90s. Then I, because of that, I ended up in child welfare, which was quite rewarding but extremely stressful. And one day I just saw a posting on the state job site for a teacher at the prison. And it dawned on me that my whole path of life led right to that, because it was similar to working out on the streets, but in some ways safer to be inside. And I knew I had the teaching background and the social work background, and it was just kind of a perfect fit. And it's just been the most rewarding teaching that I've ever done.
Now, let me ask you a question. I've heard statistics regarding people in prisons, and their level of literacy is very, very low.
It is. It is.
So you're saying this is the case. Most of them are of that level where there's no education to speak of.
In fact, I was keeping track of my own students for a few years, and I realized that the average student comes to me under fifth grade. The average. There's some higher up, and there's some as low as first grade. And then I read that statistic recently that that's true nationwide.
That's terrifying.
It's terrifying, but it says a lot about how people end up in prison.
It really is a very, very good point. I was watching a program earlier this afternoon on people in Ecuador, and I was watching what was being demonstrated in the film, and it was very clear to me that the literacy level was very low, and these people were living in a very, very violent environment. There had been tremendous assaults and burnings, and it's just amazing. And I thought, okay, now this is another country, but it happens in this country too.
Sure.
So when you watch these things, you can identify them, because you have, if you have any experience at all, you know that these things have gone on in neighborhoods, and they are still going on today, and usually it was with in environments where it is not the rule of thinking, it is the rule of physical force.
Right, right. And I'm kind of, you know, you could read about that all day, and I've read all kinds of statistics, but I can anecdotally tell you, you know, from my experience, they are there. These guys are not what you see on the cable shows. Those mm-hmm. are the extremes. Those are usually, you know, some high-profile case. What's more realistic is the bulk of these guys are, for lack of a better term, social misfits.
Mm-hmm.
They have not been raised like you and I were raised. We tend to be real judgmental because, oh, they made terrible mistakes, and, you know, they didn't have to make those mistakes. And some of these people, guys, I'm sure the women are the same, don't have the options that some of us have had. I wasn't raised wealthy. You know, I was just raised, my dad was a teacher. We had six kids. And, you know, my mom made our clothes. It wasn't like I was upper middle class or anything. But I had different options than these guys.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a very important statement. It's very significant when you have members of family that say your education is important. You've got to learn to read. You've got to learn to write. You have to add, subtract, and multiply. You need to be able to interact on a social basis. And the lack of social skills, I think, has been on the increase for quite a long time.
It's unbelievable.
The technology is wonderful that we have today, but it is not conducive to upgrading social skills.
Right.
And it's just fascinating to me. When I read your book, when I got it, I know of someone who was a teacher, and she's a very good friend, and she opted to teach teenagers in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And the ages of those that you're teaching, what are the ages?
Oh, the ranges. The youngest I've ever had there, I've taught the high school with juveniles one year, but in the adult prison, the youngest is 17, which is unusual. They're usually at least 18, all the way to 74 was the oldest I ever taught.
Wow.
That's a huge age span, but, and this is generally speaking, but they tend to be approximately middle age in maturity. I mean, not middle age, I'm sorry, middle school.
Hmm. In their
maturity.
In their maturity. Oh, my goodness.
Their social skills and their thinking, their higher level thinking is missing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just like kids. They don't know that. They don't realize that. They get real upset, and they'll say, you have to teach. I'm a grown man. But they're grown men with children's minds still.
They have never matured.
Right, and a lot of that's because of anybody involved in drugs or alcohol. They stopped growing mentally at whatever age they started using.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting.
So
I've never heard that said.
Yeah, and you can watch them grow because now they're clean in the prison most of the time. But you can watch them mature, but they have to be taught it. They don't
mm-hmm.
even realize that they're in a different world, so to
that's
speak.
True. And I think that, and that's something I've said to people many times, you can have a situation, you can have someone in front of you, but they have never, ever, if they have never known that there are other options available,
right.
they will never, ever even begin to think
right.
differently in general. There are a few that will, but most will not.
So, yeah, I've learned not only so much about how these men are and how to help them. And see, now my big mission is I think that we need more of what I do in the lower levels. It's not like I would, you know, I think that we should go treat younger ones as if they were prisoners. I think I've worked with the prisoners as if they were starting over and the things
mm-hmm.
they never got.
Mm-hmm.
And most of it is self-esteem, social skills, you know, a belief that they can do it, and the will to want to learn. They have
That's
to
the
that
key.
Important.
That is the key. That is the key. Let's talk about the environment that you work in, because people may have all kinds of ideas about a prison environment, but unless they've actually been in one, they don't honestly know. Or if they've
right.
had a member of their family incarcerated, they may have some idea. You say you teach in a totally self-contained environment.
I do.
You're a teacher. You teach all subjects, reading, writing, social studies, science, and math. and you teach all levels from kindergarten to grade 12. You're like the one-room schoolhouse teacher.
Exactly. And that's my one of my points is it works very well.
Yes, it does.
It works very well.
Yes, it does. We've gotten so far away from being able to deal with those basics in so many of the teaching environments. And so
very little equipment, you know.
That's
we don't
what
have
you
all
said.
The fancy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it works very well.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that you mention, and I totally understand this, you're limited in what you can bring in or out of your teaching environment at the prison, and that you're searched thoroughly every time before you go in.
Yes. Even my lunch, yes. Everything
that is amazing.
Clear containers, and we get shook down every day.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a while, the dogs sniff us and look for drugs and cell phones and things like that. So, yeah, we're very limited. I've had to take books in the pouring rain back to my car because I thought I had too many books with me. Like they thought I was going to, you know, I don't know, read on when I'm supposed to be working or something. So, we're really limited where when you teach in the outer world, you know, you see stuff that, oh, my guys would like this, or my students, this would be good for my students.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more difficult because we can't just bring it in.
It's a whole different world.
You have to get permission to bring in, you know, a video or an extra book, even pencils.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because of the disposition of the environment.
Right.
You make a comment about how in this country 40% of high school graduates that are passed can't actually pass a GED test.
Correct. People have a misconception on the GED, actually. It's much higher quality than they realize. And the other thing I always, so they, when they first come out with a new GED every time, they test seniors around the country of various levels, and then the passing rate, is they knock it off, they draw the line at the bot right above the 40 percentile, because it's not an easy test. And I tell the guys, what's funny is if when they were kids, now they have to take all these other tests for the federal requirements. But it used to be if you'd show up to high school, even if you got D's, you at least could get a diploma.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to take a test, five subjects. It's about 8 hours total of testing. And they have to regurgitate, so to speak, everything in one day. And they have to know it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like just showing up and taking a D, you know?
Wow.
So it's not that easy. Though I think I've gotten about 1,200 guys there.
Now, you have on average in each one of your classes about 25 men.
Yes, 25 in the morning and then 25 different ones in the afternoon.
Now, there's always a security officer that's assigned to where you're teaching. Oh, there isn't?
No. That's what people think. They think I have like five guys in one little room with a guard. I've got a whole hallway. I lock myself in there, and it's just me.
Holy Moses. Okay.
People are shocked at that. There's an officer. There's some in the building. I'm just like, if I went outside of my school and walked around the corner down the hall, I'd be in one of the living quarters. So I carry a radio, and if I needed to, I could call for help, and I have a phone. But other than that, there was times over the years, it was just recently that we got phones or radio.
Fascinating.
So you have to really be on guard and watch what you're doing. And then I have four prisoner tutors. So there's really 29 men in there and me. That's why they
Amazing.
Come to them out of there. Yeah,
they,
people don't realize that.
That the conditions that you teach in the prison are very poor.
Yes.
Why? Or how?
Budget restraints.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly budget. I mean, things are just broken all the time, and they just don't get fixed. I'm lucky now. I moved to a different floor that's at least better air quality. But I was for several years in the basement with steam leaks and mold on the walls and no windows and hotter than blazes, even in the winter, and then the summer
Amazing.
Would be worse.
It's almost as if they really don't want the people educated. It's a fascinating thing.
And you could get into that. That gets into political stuff, but it's true. Like in Indiana, the state I'm from, was usually pretty progressive on that, but they've cut way back. They just privatized. That's why I'm still there. But I've been privatized, and they cut our salary down, 40% of what we were making, and cut the staff in half.
Mm-hmm.
And it's ironic because all the research shows there's two things that keep men, and I'm sure the women too, because they've done research, from coming back to prison. One is education, and the other is age. They get too old.
Mm-hmm.
Come back. Otherwise, if we don't educate them, I don't care if you hate all these guys and you think they're the scum of the earth, it's best, for practically speaking, for our wallets if we educate them and keep them out.
Oh, I agree. I think that's very important.
Once they go home, they, especially look at, think about this economy. You know, there's no jobs, and if you don't even have a GED, that's just one more thing against you. Plus, if you have a felony, that's another thing against you. So
mm-hmm.
what happens? They end up coming back.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all
very
people that will say, oh, well, that's too bad. You know, they know better, blah, blah, blah. But they don't. That's what people don't get. They don't know better.
Now, one of the things that is so important with you and the other people that are dedicated to working with people in prison is accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And you say you do more with less,
mm-hmm.
and you just have to do what you need to do. So you really have a passion for educating them. How long have you been doing this now?
I think I'm in my 15th year.
Now, you see, 90% of those students that you have worked with through the years, you say 90% of them despise school, or did despise school when they were
mm-hmm.
growing up. They hated any kind of authority.
Mm-hmm.
And that many of these men have issues with having a woman in an authoritarian position.
Yeah.
How have you overcome that? Especially when you're left all alone and there's hardly any security.
It takes a lot of patience, and it's a balance. I think that's why they call me the mama bear, because there's a balance between not letting them run all over me.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they first come in, it's a little bit of a power struggle. I always win, but especially the younger ones, they come in, they think they're going to run the show, and I make them tuck in their shirts and tie their shoes and, you know, not stink and things like
mm-hmm.
that, teach them the basics. I think the difference is it's important to explain to them why you expect that. And when I talk to them, and usually if you can, it's one-on-one. You don't lock yourself in a room with anybody, but if they're away from the rest of the crowd, they'll listen to you better.
Mm-hmm.
And I explain to them that I see more in them than they see in themselves. I see that I picture them in a business suit, you know, and with nice hair, and kind of give them a little bit of a compliment. Can't give them too much of a compliment, then they think you're flirting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just a real fine line. But what you can see their face change when they realize you're not making a rule just to give them grief or just to be on a power trip. You're trying to help them.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a little while because they don't trust anybody. And that's understandable.
Right.
It's understandable. They've been let down a lot. They made terrible mistakes, and some of them are meaner than snakes. A lot of them aren't, though. Some of them are just real passive. It's kind of sad. They just don't believe in themselves, and they've seen nothing but failure. So until they can believe they can get it, they act like they don't care. Or they don't need it.
Boy, this sounds just like what you have going on every day in regular school.
Exactly. It mirrors that. It mirrors that, doing more with less, you
mm-hmm.
know, having less equipment, having more students. We used to have 15 in a room. Now we're up to 25. It all mirrors what's going on in the public schools. We're just kind of, that's why we don't have much. We're at the bottom of the food chain. Let's
mm-hmm.
face it. You know, if they're going to cut from the kids, you know, it's hard to justify not cutting from the prisons. But in the long run, it's going to be a real loss of money, because we spend the equivalent of like 5 semesters of college just to keep a man housed in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, why not spend a little bit to try to keep him out and give him a better chance?
Well, and that is important. But like you said, lots of times they just aren't able to cope in the outside world.
Right.
Talk about Mr. Thornton, who you write about in your book.
Okay. Remind me who he is because I made up the names.
Okay. Mr. Thornton was someone that was wanting to pass the GED test. He wanted to see it, and he threw it back at you after you showed it to him.
Yeah. This guy was cool. He had tattoos all over his body, including his head, and it turned out he's a pretty nice guy, but he was just, I'd say he's in his 40s, and he was just kind of gruff, and he thought he was ready for the GED. So he's like, just give me a test so I can see what it's like. You know, he begged me to give him one, and I knew in my heart he was not ready. I mean, he doesn't know his fractions yet, and he's not ready for this test for algebra and geometry. So he took about, usually they get frustrated and they don't want to finish it, but he threw it at me and cussed me out and yelled at me for, don't ever give me one of those again. So we had to have a little sit down, a little chit chat. And eventually, that was his only weakness, was math. And that's typical. They might be good at reading or in language, but math is most often the sore spot. So he eventually got it. He passed the GED, and of course, math wasn't his top score, but it passed.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went on to take some college classes. We had Purdue in there, which unfortunately, that's another thing that just happened. They knocked all the college classes out for all the prisons. And that's going to be a shame because that's when you really start helping them to not come back, when they get higher education. But he took some Purdue classes, and you could see him grow up. Even though he had all these tattoos, he was just much more gentle. And every time he'd see me, he'd thank me. And a lot of guys would come to me and say that this guy had talked to them about me and that they should listen to me and let me coach him and do what I say. And he got some college in him. And hopefully, I haven't heard ever what happened to him. But
you have another story in here. A 19-year-old young man, you called him Mr. Marlin. And this was someone that was just horribly, horribly violent.
Oh, yeah.
And you said he was 19 years old, but you observed him and you figured that this was a kid, and I'll call him a kid, even though he was 19, who was absolutely brilliant. How did you discern that?
Yeah, well, if you watched him, well, we test them when they first come in, and we try to get a basic level of where they're at, and he was scoring real high in those diagnostic tests, but I could tell he didn't realize he was that smart, and he was just so angry all the time. I almost had to throw him out, and I try not to because that's what they want. They're like foster kids who know where to push the button so they can get kicked out before they'll quit or whatever, before you could kick them out. But one day I talked to him out in the hall, and that's where my child welfare came in handy because I had seen behaviors like his, and I pretty much told him his life story. And, you know, I'm not a counselor, and we're not supposed to spend too much time on that because there again, you don't want to get overboard and get too involved with them. But he just stood there and cried.
Mm-hmm.
He said, how did you know that? And I explained to him that I'd seen it before. And then he started just telling me everything about how his dad used to hit him with a rifle, and he has kids of his own, and he doesn't want his kids to end up, you know, he said, I'd tear my heart out if they ended up here in prison. And he wanted to break the cycle and just didn't know what to do. So we talked a while, and I just acknowledged it is kind of what you do. You acknowledge their pain and say, how can we change this? And got him to understand how smart he was. And then, boom, he passed the GED, like, within a couple months. And then he ended up being my tutor. And never gave me another lick of trouble. He was a really good helper to teach the other guys. You know, he was really good at peer tutoring. And he was just a delight once we got that out of the way. And so, I don't always know what happens to him. Because that's what's different about teaching. When they're gone, they're gone. Mm-hmm. You know, unless they would come back, which once in a while they will. Usually when they're gone, you never hear how they do.
Having one of the prisoners or having prisoners become tutors for others, I think, is a great idea. Mm-hmm. I'll share with you a quick story. There's a member of our family who was raised in Texas. And when he was growing up, he was in a one-room schoolhouse. The teacher had about 23 students, I believe. No, maybe not. It was smaller than that. They were way out in the boonies. And this woman did exactly what you were doing. She taught reading, writing, arithmetic, mm-hmm. all these different things. And she would have the older students teach the younger students.
Right.
Because she found they retained the information. The adage, you teach best what you most need to learn, sometimes is very applicable.
Right.
And she had these students, 12 of her students that she had in this school, every single student that she had ended up having top grades. They passed tests with flying colors. Every single one of her students ended up going into professional areas where the problem-solving skills were there. They were just amazingly good, and she was released from her job when they decided to force the kids to go into public schools.
Yeah.
But she had it down. And yeah. One of her students, I had the chance to listen to the story, and they said, boy, we were held accountable. We really were. And someone might, listening to this, say, oh, well, that's just nice, the one-room schoolhouse, we can't, you know, do that anymore, blah, blah, blah. It's not that we have to go back to a one-room schoolhouse. We have to go back to the understanding what education really is all about. And that kids can learn, and as you said, it helps them to be an active, prosperous member of society. And you also, in the teaching, have to teach them social skills. They've dropped that out of curriculum.
Yes. Yeah. And you have to believe that they can do it before they believe it. You know, you have to have really high expectations, not to give them a nervous breakdown. You kind of work up to it, because at first they think they're working hard and they don't know. I always tease them. You don't know how hard you're going to work, because, you know, kind of ease them into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lower-level guy, it helps him because he can teach somebody a little lower than him, and it does. I went back to school about 5 years ago and got another degree, and after all those years, I found that a lot of things that we were doing 30 years ago, now brain research proves works.
Right.
And that's one of them, you just said. As far as retention of the knowledge, way up there, I think it's the top, if not second, is peer teaching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It
the
really,
younger ones
really
look up to the older ones. I have a friend whose son is just a superb musician. And he is very fortunate in that his teachers, because he's so good, they say, well, you teach the little ones.
Mm-hmm.
So here he is, he's 15, 16 years old, and he's teaching little kids, and these little kids are just looking up at him and going gaga.
Yeah.
They're saying, wow, I want to be like you.
That's exactly
so it's
right.
Having a good example. That's the same thing that exists in gangs.
Mm-hmm.
And what you have is that peer environment, but instead of a healthy one, you have an unhealthy one.
Right. And that's why sometimes I'll grab a guy who's, a lot of them are, they think they're gangsters or they want to be gangsters, and some of them actually are in gangs. A lot of them are out on the streets. But if you grab one who is really smart and he's a good leader, and I can get him to understand what power he has for the good, to, you know, to pull other people along, to help them with their schooling and to make better decisions, it works wonders if it works. You know, once in a while you get a guy who will just ignore you because he knows better. But 9 times out of 10, just by paying them that compliment, you can get them on your side, that they'll help instead of fight against you. And that helps with the discipline.
I think, Janice, I know we're just about out of time here. Your book is so down to earth and so well written and very clear in its message. And I think anyone that would like to have an understanding about an aspect of teaching that is having a very good level of success, regardless of the lack of tools that most public schools would have that you don't have, you know what the results are, and you've got all of that information available. What is your website that people can go to find out more?
The website is LockedUpWithSuccess.com.
LockedUpWithSuccess.com. And if you have children and you say, oh, what can I do so that my kids will do better in school? If you're a parent, if you have young people that you're aware of that are starting perhaps to have difficulties and you want to support your teachers as well as those families that may need it, Locked Up with Success is really a good book to be able to pass along. Janice Chamberlain, thank you very much for being with me today. Her website is, thank you, lockedupwithsuccess.com. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break and we'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back, and I've got a little bit of this, a little bit of that I'm going to be sharing with you, and if you want me to share my intuitive talents with you, tell you what I perceive, give me a call at our toll-free number, 888-627-6008, and if you're a first-time listener, all I need is your first name or initial, that's all I'll need, 888-627-6008. I, yesterday, was at the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. I have a booth there. I'm one of the merchants. And I'll tell you, it's just an absolutely wonderful event. If you're in the state of Washington, in western Washington, and you can come out these next 2 weekends, please do. It is incredible. The vendors there are marvelous. The troop that is entertaining, the jousting and the races and all kinds of fabulous activities. This is a family event. And we have got a super-duper bunny rabbit, and I'm not exaggerating, that is dressed in tails, and he walks around the grounds. This gentleman that is this rabbit special, kids, you should see their eyes. They just get as big as saucers, and they're so excited. They go, wow! I mean, when you see the kids and their joy of just seeing all of these wonderful events and activities going on and the metal workers and people that are doing things, crafts, that you would know where it was in that time frame and the Renaissance period. It's just delight for adults and children. It's being held in Bonnie Lake. Go to their website, the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. Check it out. They'll give you the directions. It is wonderful. And we just had fabulous weather this past weekend, and we're going to have, according to some information from some weather specialists, we're going to have two weekends here this year that are just going to be wonderful. So pack up the family, come on out, and if you want more information, you can go into my newsletter, and you'll see it's all posted in my newsletter and also on the events page. So do that. It is just wonderful. And check out my booth. I have the booth that has the big yellow banners with the giant red lions on it. So you can find that, and I'll be in there, and I'll have books, and I've got little handmade angels that are in there and all kinds of stuff. So anyway, it's just a wonderful event. Do come out and see us. It's just awesome. I absolutely love doing it. Well, I wanted to say one of the people I had the opportunity to have a conversation with yesterday was a flight attendant. And this woman travels to Dubai, South Africa. She's on one of these major airlines that travels to different points in the world. And when I came across some things that were written up, there was this one airline that asked its cabin crew to list some of the odd requests they've entertained from passengers. And one of the biggest, this one is really something, that you're in a plane, you're 35,000, 40,000 feet up, and passengers will say, can you please open a window? Oh, don't you just love that one? But here are a few others that people have said to flight attendants. There was an elderly gentleman who couldn't sleep. He asked if the captain to turn down the noise in the plane. So the captain asked the gentleman, do you mean the engine? And, oh, yes, yes, the engine, sir, he replied. We do need the engine. Imagine this when you're 40,000 feet up in the air. Okay, and then there's another flight attendant. She said, I was once offering a family their meals. The mother said her children would prefer McDonald's. So could I please get them a Big Mac and fries? Doesn't that grab your imagination? And the last one is, a woman who was sitting in first class was wearing a tiny pink crop top and a mint green miniskirt. She had also booked the seat next to her for her Barbie doll, which was wearing the exact same outfit and was sitting upright with its seatbelt on. The woman requested of the flight attendant a cup of tea and a massage for the doll. Oh, I'm telling you, it's stories like this that professionals just will go, let me tell you mine. And there's probably many, many more, but I just got a chuckle out of that. I thought that was really funny. And this gal that is a flight attendant was telling me about some of her adventures on flights, and boy, your hair would turn white after a while with some of the people then from different cultures and different environments and their behavior. It's just absolutely unbelievable. And I learned something I didn't know, and that is if you have a passenger that is either violently ill or someone that is just going to have to be taken off the plane, and they do have those occasions periodically, it costs an airline $300,000 when they have to land at an airport that is not on their schedule. So this one flight attendant was telling me that they had had this one fellow on the flight. He had some business associates with him, and this person was just grotesquely drunk. He was obnoxious. He was seated in an aisle seat. And, of course, these planes are pretty big that fly overseas to these various countries. And she said that she went to his associates because he was just appalling in his behavior. She said, if we have to take this plane down to take him off the plane, it's going to cost you $300,000. So here's my suggestion. You put him in the middle of this middle aisle. You know, they have the middle aisles on the plane so that they maybe have six or seven seats in the middle across. It's one of the worst places to sit, especially if you're in the middle. She said, you will put him in the middle. You do not let him out, and you do not let him get an aisle seat. That's gone. Because if we have to take this plane down so he's off, he may not be allowed into America. She said, most people don't know that. She said, if there is a commotion, if there's just appalling behavior that they just cannot tolerate and it cannot be controlled, that's what happens. So if you have an honorary kid or you have someone that decides to get pretty uppity, you might tell them it might cost them about $300,000 if the plane is stopped. Or has to go down and land at an airport that's not scheduled. an amazing piece of information. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008 is the toll-free number. By the way, I want to let you know who's going to be coming on air with me this week. We have got some real dynamic people. Lorraine Holden has put together a book saying, Don't Get Thin, Get Healthy. And then we're going to be talking with Lisette Larkins about difficult people. Flight attendants aren't the only ones that experience this. We all do it one time or another. So we'll be talking about that. Margaret McLean has written a book called Under Fire. This is a fiction story, but boy, is it loaded with facts about the legal system. So we're going to be talking about that. And then Dr. Murray Grossen is going to be on the air with me on Friday. We're going to be talking about a subject that affects every single person on this planet at one time or another, and that is stress. And this man has a real passion for helping people know what they can do about stress and how to manage it in a positive way. So we have got a great lineup of people. And don't forget, you can go in to BBS and check out show information and find out little bits of detail about those people that are going to be coming up on the Donna Siebel Show, and I invite you to do exactly that. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. I wanted to talk with you today a little bit about a subject. It's fireballs. And if you've never seen one, I have. I was, I think about 8 or 9 years old, and I saw more than one. And they are a phenomena that once you see them, you'd never forget it. I was in Florida, and it's something that was a natural phenomena down there, at least at the time when I saw it. People would say, when you have the thunderstorms come through in Florida, and this was, I believe, around the Miami area, that you just sit still, you don't do anything, because the electricity forms these fireballs. Well, in 1931, on May 24th, there was in the North Atlantic Ocean a real unusual flickering purple light. It was so bright that it illuminated the sea and the sky, and it was surrounding a ship. It was the SS Nova Scotia. They had no clue. There was nothing that gave anyone any idea of where this came from. It was just there. Well, on May 24th, 1948, in Cure Pipe, Mauritius, a whirlwind and a fireball joined forces. These two natural forces ended up destroying a hard-packed surface of a tennis court. There was a 2-foot fireball on that date that passed through a wire fence between the football court and the tennis court. Didn't do any harm until it landed on the surface, and it skidded. People that saw it said it skidded over the surface, and it ended up with having so much energy that it dug up a trench 2 feet wide, 60 feet long, 4 inches deep. Now, this surface was like a clay surface, and all of the material that was dug up, they said it was tossed 60 feet high and 50 feet west of the court. There was a 50-pound umpire chair that was also lifted 20 feet up in the air, and then it broke apart in front of everyone in midair and landed in pieces on the east side of the court, opposite of the surface material. It's almost as if there was an intelligence behind this. Now, in 1948, there was an astronomer who actually discovered Pluto. His name is Clyde Tombaugh. He saw 3 green fireballs over New Mexico. So all of these different colors, purple, green, the one I saw was golden and red in Florida. And then in 1920 in Parkside, South Australia, there was a 12-inch smoking ball of fire that was shooting out glowing strands of electricity, and I've seen that. And it came down from the sky. Now, I didn't see it coming from the sky. It entered into the house that we were in. But in this situation, it came down from the sky, bounced like a ball along a cement porch floor and then up over the house next door and crashed into a residence that was beyond that house, totally destroying it. And in 1923 in Maryland, there was a scientist that watched a balloon-sized fireball moving 7 feet above the ground towards a tulip tree, where it exploded it, and it knocked the bark over the tree, killing it, obviously. And in 61 in Minnesota, Richard Vogt was driving at night when a 3-foot ball of fog fell from the sky and crashed into his car. He said his car got incredibly hot, the windshield cracked, and the hood got scorched. And in 1969 in Finland, a truck was struck by a fireball, and it exploded on impact, but the vehicle wasn't damaged. So go figure. Amazing stuff, isn't it? Natural phenomena. We don't have answers. We just don't know why these fireballs come in different colors, different parts of the world, and have the effects they do. Fascinating, isn't it? I think so. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone number to give me a call at is 888-627-6008, and I'll be happy to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. I don't know about you, but I have a sweet tooth, and when it's hot, ice cream is good. Well, I like B&J's, to be perfectly frank. Ben and Jerry's. I like their yogurt, actually, better than actual ice cream. But I have something here in the way of a recipe that I think is so good and so easy. And boy, I'll tell you, it just seems to go with summertime. Now, we still aren't having a heat wave here in the Pacific Northwest, which I'm grateful for, but so many of you are in places where it is just scorching. And ice cream and cold items really hit the spot. Well, how about a mint chocolate crunch ice cream cake? How does that sound? Well, I'll give you the information in just a bit. So have a pad of paper handy and a pen, and then I'll share it with you. Real easy to do and yummy. And if you wanted to, you could even use different ice creams. But this is something I wanted to share. I don't know the lady's name. I don't have it in front of me. But they sent me this little email, and it was waiting for me today because I haven't been checking my email because I was doing the appearance out in Bonnie Lake, Washington. But here we are, some very nice items, and it's a little bit about being grateful, and I thought I would share it with you because I liked what it said. And this is what this person said. I'm thankful for the wife who says it's hot dogs tonight because she's home with me and not out with someone else. I'm thankful for the husband who's on the sofa being a couch potato because he's home with me and not out at the bars. I'm thankful for the teenager who is complaining about doing dishes because it means that kid is at home, not on the streets. I'm thankful for the taxes I pay because it means I am employed. I'm also thankful for the mess to clean after a party because it means I've been surrounded by friends. I'm thankful for the clothes that fit a little too snug because it means I have enough to eat. I'm thankful for my shadow that watches me work because it means I'm out in the sunshine. I'm thankful for a lawn that needs mowing, windows that need cleaning, and gutters that need fixing because it means I have a home. I'm thankful for all the complaining I hear about the government because it means we have freedom of speech. I'm thankful for the parking spot I find at the far end of the parking lot because it means I am capable of walking and I've been blessed with transportation. I'm thankful for my huge heating bill because it means I'm warm. I'm thankful for the lady behind me in church who sings off key because it means I can hear. I'm thankful for the pile of laundry and ironing because it means I have clothes to wear. I'm thankful for weariness and aching muscles at the end of the day because it means I've been capable of working hard. I am thankful for the alarm that goes off in the early morning hours because it means I am alive. And finally, I'm thankful for too much email because it means I have friends who are thinking of me. And I want to thank that person who took the time to send me that delightful array of thoughts, because that's what we do need to do. We do need to be awake and grateful for what we have in life. If we get into our pity pots and we get on the, what I want to call the treadmill of complaining, then we don't have an opportunity of looking at how to solve our problems or even how to communicate about them. And you have to be aware. You have to wake up to the fact that you do have options. And that is where, when you can read different types of material, go to your public library. Check out books on subjects you haven't a clue about. Maybe you've always wanted to know how to fix liverwurst or something other from scratch. Whatever. Find out what's there. Learn about different cultures. Find out about what options are available. It is so important to be able to do that. And when you don't ask questions, wow, you need to make it okay to question. It's something that's important. And I know when I was growing up, I was taught you don't open your mouth, you don't ask questions, you just take in everything that everybody says and that's it, that's gospel. You don't have the intelligence to really figure things out. Forget that stuff. Kids are really innovative. Adults can be innovative. Our guest today talked about adults in prison who have the mentality of a kindergarten student. And this is a real hard thing to wrap your mind around, isn't it? But it's a reality. It is there. So she has dedicated her life to opening up their world, if they are wanting to do it, to take the journey into a level of learning that will last for their whole lives. And they'll be able to share that with their children. And it's the same thing we need to do for ourselves. Every time we learn something new, every time we become aware of life, that gives us an option to be able to go forward. We have to understand life is ever ongoing in the learning process, and isn't that wonderful? You will never know it all, and it's exciting because there's always new horizons for you to explore. Okay, ready for the milk chocolate crunch ice cream cake? Woohoo! I'll tell you what, this would be good, and I do like mint chocolate ice cream. It's really, really good. Now, you're going to make a chocolate crumb crust. So you're going to need a package, about 9 ounces of chocolate wafer cookies, and you want to grind them up. So you can use your Cuisinart, or you can just get a plastic bag and just mash them, whatever you want to do. Fill them with the cookies and mash them with a mallet. And then you're going to need 6 tablespoons of unsalted butter, unsalted, because the salt is not going to have a good effect with the flavor of the ice cream. So you want 6 tablespoons of unsalted butter. That needs to be melted. Use your microwave. You have that done in 30 seconds. And your milk chocolate crunch. You need 2 cups of coarsely crushed chocolate mint sandwich cookies. Chocolate mint sandwich cookies. And you're going to need about 20 of them. Get any brand you like. You're going to need 4 ounces of semi-sweet chocolate, chopped. You're going to need 1 tablespoon of oil and 1 container, about 1 3/4 quarts of mint chocolate chip or peppermint ice cream, whatever is your favorite. And, of course, that has to be sort of at room temperature because it needs to be soft. Now, this is what you're going to need to do. You're going to need to bake the crust. And you want to heat your oven up to 325 degrees, and you want to butter a 9 by 2 3/4 inch springform pan. And for your crust, you're going to stir your wafer crumbs with butter to moisten them evenly. You're going to put the mixture in your springform pan, and you use your fingers or the back of a spoon, and you want to press the crumb mixture evenly over the bottom and 1 inch, just 1 inch, up the side of the pan. You want to bake it at 325 for 6 minutes. That's it. Then you take it out, let it cool. Now, for your milk, your mint chocolate crunch, you want to line a baking sheet with parchment paper. You want to put your cookie crumbs in a large bowl, put them to the side. You take the chocolate and the oil in a heat-proof bowl, and you place it over, but you don't want it to touch, your simmering water. So a double boiler really comes in handy here. And you want to stir until the chocolate and oil is melted and real smooth and creamy. Then the chocolate, you pour over the warm chocolate, you pour it over the cookie crumbs that you have put in that separate bowl, and you just mix it up until they're all coated with that wonderful chocolate mixture. And then you spread the crumb mixture over the baking sheet. Remember, you've got the parchment paper, so it's going to cool really, really fast. Then you take half of your ice cream, and you spread half of your ice cream in the crust, smooth it, sprinkle it with half of the mint chocolate crunch, and then you spread the remaining ice cream over the crunch, sprinkle it with the remaining crunch, wrap it tightly in plastic and heavy foil, and freeze it for overnight or up to a week. Mm-hmm. Yum. Oh, so good. Oh, it's wonderful. But, you know, you could do this with different flavors. But have a wonderful, wonderful day or evening, wherever you might be. This is Donna Siebel. We'll be back here tomorrow. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a wonderful time. Talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBS Radio. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.